A written motion to quash file. But we believe that there may not even be a need for a specific motion to quash if the indictment itself does not allege an offense against the laws of the state of Texas as stated in 1.03 of the Texas Penal Code. Specifically, they said that he was charged to wit failing to notify law enforcement authority, local law enforcement authority, to wit, the police department, city of Arlington. There is no such law. The local law enforcement authority is defined in the first or second chapters, which says specifically the local law enforcement authority at that time was either the police chief of the municipality or the sheriff of the county.
Has the statute been changed?
They've modified it to say something about some kind of, I can't remember what it's called. It has been changed, but it hasn't specifically said that you could go to, had something to do with the registration process, and I don't really remember.
Centralized Registration Authority.
That was it. But I still think that even with that change, it really, if they're going to allege local law enforcement authority, then it means they've got to bring the police chief or bring the sheriff in. Interesting thing about it is the original indictment, which is included in the clerk's record, I believe you'll look at it and it'll say local law enforcement authority to wit the chief of police of the city of Arlington. And they re-indicted it to allege the local law enforcement authority and that prose, to wit the police department, city of Arlington. There's no prose in anywhere in the statute that says the police department, city of Arlington, is part of a defined crime. And obviously, one of the public policy issues is that I think the state does not want to have to be in the business of calling in the chief of police or Sheriff Anderson to testify in these matters. But there is simply nothing in any statute that says that they can delegate this reporting authority to any lieutenants, any representatives. It specifically states in the statute that it has to be the chief of police or the sheriff. And in this particular case, the state did not introduce any evidence, did not call the chief of police to say the chief of police was never notified by Mr. Ingram. Also, another flaw in the statute is that if you'll look at various...
Anderson, before you leave that point, I'd like to understand if it's your position that the statute requires a personal face-to-face meeting with the person who is required to report with the police chief.
I'll tell you directly, Your Honor. 62055 says that if a person is going to make a change of address, they have to notify the local law enforcement authority. That has a specific definition that it must be the chief of police or it must be the sheriff of the county, and that is the clear language of the statute.
Can it be done in writing?
It doesn't say how you're supposed to notify.
So it doesn't say you either do it in writing or you do it face-to-face or you do it by telephone or by email. It doesn't say any of those things.
I think that's correct, Your Honor, but I think it is required that the police chief himself or Sheriff Anderson or the sheriff of the county is going to have to come and testify in these cases, and they simply did not do it in this case.
Okay. And yet, your position is that the statute doesn't specifically provide, but we clearly read and see that it doesn't, for the method of reporting, but that because it names the official office of the police chief of Arlington in this case, that requires the police chief to, and only the police chief to be the witness to identify a failure to report an address change.
I believe that is the clear reading of the law.
Was he re-indicted after the change in the law to include a centralized registration authority or before?
I don't know, Your Honor. I think that statute may have been changed about the time of the re-indictment, but obviously we don't have ex post facto laws in this state, and he would be governed by the law that existed at the time of the alleged offense. But even so, they didn't include that local law enforcement registry or whatever that was called, central registration. That's not the prose they put in the new indictment. They left the term law enforcement authority and then said, to wit, the police department, city of Arlington, which still doesn't appear in the definition sections of the statute.
Well, this is something that everybody knows, and I'm not sure where it comes from. Everybody knows they've got to report in person. Where does that come from, or how do I know that they've got to report in person? where am I getting this? Because everybody knows it. Is it because they're prosecuted if they don't do it in person? I mean, because I know they can't send a letter and they can't email the sheriff and say, I'm here, find me if you can. I mean,
well, Your Honor, I think that's an interesting observation in that there was objections in the record when the person who was in charge of the registration kept saying things like, that means you've got to come tell me in person and your resident or your address has to be the place you lay your head at night. And that simply doesn't appear any place in the statute.
Well, those, it does say report in person in the statute, I think.
Yeah, it does.
Up in the body of it, report in person to the local law enforcement authority.
Well, I think that still means that you're going to have to, when the local law enforcement authority is defined as the police chief or the, we're in a loop here, it's always got to be the police chief. I mean, the legislature could say, or his representative, and they didn't do it. They didn't do it. And the other issue in this particular statute, 62055, they use the term change of address. Other parts of the statute, they use the term residence. And here, they use the term address. And address is not listed anywhere in the definition section. So address, as the best I could find and cited, was the Black's Law Dictionary, which says a place where a person receives their mail. And at the time he was arrested, or at the time he was accused of this, he was still getting his mail there and still had other property there. So our position is he may have changed residences. He may not have been laying his head on the pillow there at night, but that was legally his address. Well, and the statute says address.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
If he didn't report in person to anyone, though, did he? I mean, as I understand it, the evidence is that he left in his girlfriend's car and was gone for a week, and she reported it, and then he turned himself in. So, however it's interpreted, do we really need to decide whether or what the statute requires since he didn't do any of it?
Well, Your Honor, we don't know that he didn't report to the police chief since the police chief never came to testify.
Okay.
And you cannot shift the burden of proof to the defendant. We have no affirmative duty to say that we did report to somebody or we didn't report to somebody. I mean, I think they're trying to say there's an implication that he didn't report to the police chief in person. But we don't know that for sure because the police chief didn't appear.
You know, it would be so simple if either they changed the statute and allowed a designee, which was the easiest way to do it, or there was a log of people who reported to the police chief or the chief of police, then the custodian of the record could come testify to the absence of the entry, and that would be some evidence.
It'd be some evidence. Would it be evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to meet a criminal standard?
If it was required to be logged in, and, you know, like the absence of a birth certificate or the absence of a marriage license or the absence of a divorce decree, that, you know, there would be some marriage. Have y'all read Cordova, please take?
Your Honor, I tried that case, and I have read it.
Okay.
I'm fully familiar with it.
Well, remember Judge Wilson said in that case that the statute didn't authorize the police chief or the sheriff to designate an agent or other substitute person to whom sex offenders could report. I mean, Judge Wilson apparently has noted that this is a problem in Cordova, that there's just no provision for any substitute person. And so we have addressed it to that extent.
And I believe that, with all due respect to the court, I think the court actually, in its opinion, shifted the burden of proof to the defendant in that case, because they basically said there's no evidence. He didn't produce any evidence that he did. And I think the court, with all due respect, shifted the burden of proof onto the appellant.
I'm not sure that's exactly what it says, and it wasn't appealed the same way.
Maybe not, but I'm very familiar with that case, because
yeah,
I
think the issue was the same at the appellate level. Because there is a statement in that opinion, had the legislature, and maybe quoting Judge Wilson, had the legislature intended police chiefs and sheriffs to designate agents to whom sex offenders should report, that body would have so provided. I mean, that's in that opinion out of this court.
Your Honor, as you were saying, it'd be easy to fix, but as we know, we're stuck with the law and the facts that we have in this case. And we think that the law and the facts are very clear. It's very specific.
Okay, the statute says that they're going to be gone, more than 7 days? They have moved?
They have to notify a change of address, and I can't remember how many days in advance, to the law enforcement authority. So we have two issues there. Address, we contend there's no reason to notify the law.
Was he gone the length of time necessary to make it a change of address?
Your Honor, I don't know if the record is completely clear about it, but I think it may have been a couple of months.
Okay.
But the thing is, he could have been gone longer than that. He's in the penitentiary now. And we contend that is still his address, because he's getting mail there. That is still his address when he has not at his home away from home.
So the statute doesn't define address.
It does not define address.
Or residence.
Well, it may define residence, but residence is not in this statute for which he was convicted. Only address. And as we stated before, law enforcement authority is defined specifically as the chief of police, the sheriff, or this central authority. But it was only chief of police and sheriff at the time he was accused. Therefore, premises considered, we request reverse and render. Are there any other questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Deborah, what do you have to say about this?
Well, Your Honor, I have lots to say, I'm sure. Whether I can remember to say it all is a whole different question, but I'm going to start with, if you look at 62.055, it's talking about change of address, and it is 7 days they're supposed to notify.
7 days.
And it does say in person, so that I think that's where that requirement that you were asking about earlier comes from. The other thing about
if they're going to be someplace else for 7 days, or
no.
7 days in advance.
Well, 7 days in advance. If they intend to change address, then 7 days in advance they have to go and report that, and then once they change address, they have to go where, and this is the other thing I was going to point out, where the person's new residence is located to report. The address thing, when I looked at this, I agree. I don't think it's defined. You know, it's sort of frustrating to read. I don't know why. Other parts of the statute, they'll say residence, even within this one subsection. Sometimes they use address, sometimes they use residence. I don't know if this is one of those cases where somebody is trying to make the writing more interesting by changing the words around and substituting a word that they think means the same thing. It's frustrating, I will say that.
And then we also have mailing address, residence address, billing address.
I think in this case, you look at you're going to have to look at 62 as a whole, and even within this one subsection at the end, it says address, but then it also talks about they've got to report where the person's new residence is located. So clearly, this provision and the sex offender registration statutes as a whole are a way to let law enforcement know where a person is residing and spending a substantial amount of time. I don't think that there's anything in the statutory scheme that would suggest that it's really just looking for a mailing address.
Okay, so following your logic, if your mailing address was a post office box, then you would be required to sleep in your post office box if address were mailing address, and you had to be at your address.
Well, I think so wherever you're laying your head is the address so they're looking for.
It has
for.
To be your residence address, and the statute really should say that.
It would have been nice if they had used residence at the beginning of that subsection. They did use it at the end of the subsection. But I think clearly the intent is looking to where a person is physically located so that if the police need to find the person, they've got a way to look and say, oh, well, here's where this person is located. Mm-hmm. This is where they
is
live,
where
more or less.
Go arrest them.
This is where we go arrest them, is the practical.
And that's the whole point of it, right?
That is the whole.
By the neighbors that there's a sex offender in the neighborhood and mm-hmm. be able to go arrest them.
Correct.
Correct. Two purposes.
Now, in this case, Mr. Ingram moved, if I'm remembering the dates right, he moved, I believe, in July is when he moved to Arlington, and in September was when he disappeared. And the lady he was living with said he didn't live here. I never saw him after that until January is when he turned himself in. That's when she went and picked him up. He turned himself in. He made a statement to his parole officer that he knew he had messed up and he shouldn't have moved and that he had been running. So there is evidence here that he, this isn't a case where he had, there was some, I mean, he flat out wasn't at this address. Now there's some testimony he, even to this day, still gets mail there and may have some clothes there, but I would assert that the trial court, that might have been a conflict in the evidence for the trial court to resolve, but that's at the most, that's all that was. There's nothing
so
about that.
His statement was an admission that relieved the state of the duty to produce the chief of police, the Arlington chief of police?
His admission, regardless, I think his admission is certainly evidence that the trial court could rely on, but I don't believe that the state had any duty to produce a specific witness, and I absolutely disagree with that.
If he had to report to the chief of police, and the statute doesn't allow him to delegate that duty. Remember the old case law where the courts had the authority to amend conditions of probation, and that could not be delegated to the probation officers because the statute didn't provide for delegation, so the legislature went in and changed the statute to provide for delegation. And most legal scholars thought that if the statute says you've got only a specific person has the authority to do an act, then unless the statute allows delegation, there is no delegation permitted.
And I do have a section of my brief under in response to his motion to quash, and I take the position I disagree, and I do cite the court's decision in Cordova. I realize this is probably an uphill battle and not a popular argument, but I am arguing that that's not what the statute says, that that's reading too much into the statute, and that reporting, you can fulfill your duty to report to the police chief by reporting to the police department. If that's basically this is sort of the method that the police chief can put into place to fulfill the requirement. The other thing is the statute talks
so
about.
I could be driving down the street, fail to stop at a stop sign, and get pulled over. And when the motorcycle officer says, "What's your address?" tell him my address, and I have reported as a sex offender, because that's to the police department.
If the police chief has authorized that as the manner in which you can report, now that you know that. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
How does anybody know that?
Well, going down to the police department and finding out, having your parole officer tell you. In this case, the police department told him exactly how to report. There's testimony about that. The parole officer also did the same, told him who to report to, here's the phone number. They went through all the requirements with him.
But shouldn't the statute, I mean, the statute says, defines the police department as police chief? Or law enforcement is the police chief? Or the sheriff's?
It certainly would be great for me if they had used those words, and I would hope that they would amend it, but I don't think it's necessary. I, this is one of those things, it's a strange argument to make, but I think that really you're looking at the reporting requirements all put duties on the person reporting. And it doesn't really set out the manner in which the police department has to set up this. I mean, as a practical matter, there's no way a police chief of a large municipality can personally meet with every sex offender and do all, and testify at trial. There's no way that can happen. I don't think we should read in an unreasonable.
I mean, isn't it up to the legislature to fix the problems? Remember when it was theft of a gun worth less than $400 was a misdemeanor, but more than $400 was a felony? Theft of a gun worth exactly $400 was a crime. Remember that?
I don't remember that, but.
And, I mean, that wasn't up to the courts to fix it.
I think, though, that the courts have a duty. If you can find a way to read a statute that results in a workable solution, that the courts ought to do that. I think if you have a choice between a construction that's going to wind up imposing unworkable consequences and you have a choice in something that is workable, I think the court should go with one that's workable. If there's no choice, I agree, then it would be up to the legislature to fix it. But I think in this case, you can read the statute in a manner that allows the police chief to fulfill his duty by having the person meet with a member of his department.
Sir, if you've accurately quoted 62055A on page 14 of your brief, and as I'm reading that statute, it doesn't say anything about a police chief. It just says that the person who's going to move is to report in person to the local law enforcement authority designated as the person's primary registration authority by the department. That's the first phrase. And then it goes on to talk about and to the juvenile probation officer, community supervision, correction department officer, or parole officer supervising the person and provide the authority and the officer with the person's anticipated move date and new address. It's not talking about reporting to a police chief.
Yeah, 62001, section 2 says local law enforcement authority means, as applicable, the chief of police of a municipality, the sheriff of the county in this state, or a centralized registration authority. But that wasn't the statute in effect at the time.
I was asking her if she'd actually reported that, and then I wanted the follow-up question is whether or not there is in the city of Arlington any designation by the police chief as to other people that are to work on the question of maintaining sex offender records in the city of Arlington.
I hope I have accurately quoted that. I'll just say that. I think I have, and I really hope so. My understanding from the testimony was the police chief has designated. They had basically people who testified, I'm the person set up within the police department who receives these people when they come in to register.
That's what was done here. The people testifying were the ones that have been designated by the police chief to handle this function.
And yes, sir. Now, I guess before, I will say this. Let me backtrack. I hate to change the subject some, but I will say, I don't think that the court has to reach. This is all very interesting. I'm very into the argument, all of that. I think, though, that this really comes up as subsumed under his point of error that the trial court erred by overruling the motion to quash. Since there was no written motion to quash, I think the court can dispose of that point of error on that basis. The other points of error deal with sufficiency of the evidence. I think no matter how you construe the statute, the evidence is sufficient because the people testified that he had not registered with anyone anywhere in Texas or anywhere in the United States. Under that, we also had his parole officer talk about the admission he made that he had absconded, basically. That testimony basically subsumes. So if he didn't report to anybody, he certainly didn't report to the police, the chief of police. So I think even no matter how you construe the statute, the evidence is sufficient, and the court didn't err in overruling the motion to quash because there was no written motion.
And who all testified that he reported to no one?
Yeah, it was an Arlington police officer, as I recall, who was one of the people who met with the sex offender registrar.
The indictment said failure to report to law enforcement.
The indictment said he failed to report to the, I think, appropriate law enforcement authority, to wit, the police department of Arlington, Texas.
Okay, so there's no allegation he failed to report to the parole officer?
Right, correct. Correct. But the testimony would include the police chief. So I think, while I certainly want to make the argument, and I think it's an important issue, that the statute does not require a personal meeting with the chief of police, the court doesn't actually have to address that issue in this case.
Okay, you're referring not to when he first moved to Arlington, but when he left Arlington?
When he failed to change his address, is the allegation.
And he has to notify the person, the jurisdiction he's leaving, that he's leaving. And that's what y'all alleged, that he did?
Correct. He moved to Arlington, and I think this was back in July, he reports to Fort Worth that he's going to move to Arlington. Then he goes and registers in Arlington. The problem was, after he registered in Arlington, then in September he vanishes, and he doesn't report that to anyone. And so since he left the residence, he wasn't living there. He admits he ran away, admits he shouldn't have moved. Then before he did that, he had to go and report to Arlington where he intended to move. Does that make sense?
Okay. So it is to the defendant's benefit to be able to report someone other than the police chief. Because if the state were going to prosecute for failure to report to the police chief, and the police chief was as difficult to find as police chiefs usually are, then the police chief could make it impossible ever to comply with the law to keep sex offenders out of their jurisdiction.
It's an interesting question. I don't know the answer. I will say, when I was looking at the sex offender registration statutes, Chapter 62 as a whole, it seemed to put all of the actions they're talking about are on the person reporting. The person reporting shall do this, shall do this, shall tell them this. It doesn't actually say anything about the person receiving the registration, other than in the definition that the law enforcement, who is the, how you define law enforcement authority. Does that make sense? Thank you, Your Honor.
First of all, just in rebuttal to the concept that there was no written or motion to quash, we believe that this was actually a jurisdictional issue, and we simply pointed it out to the court in the form of an oral motion to quash, but we simply stated that's not a law. There's no violation of the law alleged in this indictment. With regard to the term address and what we're actually charged with, we're charged with 62055. They track the prose in that particular statute that says within 7 days you're supposed to report in person to the law enforcement authority of a change of address.
It's actually 7 days before you move, isn't it?
Change of address, Your Honor.
All right. Change of address or residence.
62055?
Yes, sir.
Well, specifically, they charged him in the indictment with failing to notify of a change of address. They did not mention residence in that indictment. Specifically, they used the term address in the indictment. And our contention is the address is not defined, but he was still getting mail there. But as far as the definition of local law enforcement authority that existed at the time of this accusation, it does specifically state it has to be the chief of police, and it does have to be, or the sheriff of the county. The law is the law. It may be a little bit difficult to deal with, and it's time for the courts to rule on the law and the legislature to change it if it needs to be changed. But with this particular defendant in this particular case, we think that the law does not fit the facts. And just to say that I messed up, he may have messed up, that doesn't mean he violated the law. That he, and there's, just because somebody testifies, we don't know that he ever reported to anyone. How can you say that if you're over here in one department that, and you're not the chief of police, how can you speak for the chief of police to say he didn't? That's just kind of a blatant reverse hearsay, shifting the burden again, I think, to the defendant. It may be difficult, and when the first time a chief of police gets a subpoena to one of these trials, he's probably going to be calling his legislature to get it fixed. But we think it's time for the court to rule on the law on both of these instances, and we think the law, as it was, he was charged in this indictment, and the proof failed to fit the indictment, and that the evidence is legally insufficient because the chief of police did not come and testify. So we're asking not just for reversal rendition, but reversal and, I mean, we're asking for reversal and rendering as opposed to reverse and remand.
Mr. Henderson.
Yes, sir.
Do you dispute the statements in the state's brief that Ms. Edmonds Haynes, in testifying, talked about the failure to report after September? Part of Mr. Pena that he was no longer residing at 2404 Limestone in Arlington, Texas.
I don't disagree with that, but Your Honor, I do disagree with the fact that he had changed addresses. An address is very different than residence. And we might be.
The bottom of the statute we're talking about talks about residence, and the top of it talks about address, and we're charged with reasonably interpreting what the legislature writes for us.
The legislature specifically put in this statute and the way that this person was indicted that he failed to notify of a change of address, and there is no definition of address in the statute.
Brendan Colvin is the person that was living at 2404 Limestone, according to the state's brief that she testified about when he left on September 30th with her car. Didn't show up again until January. That's the way, and he didn't tell anybody he was leaving in January. But your contention is because he's getting his mail at this place, even if he's not there, and she testified he wasn't there, then that is still a failure to present proof to satisfy the statute.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
So you're saying if a college kid goes off to college, what's his address? Is it where he goes for Thanksgiving? Is it the dormitory he lives in?
The Black Law Dictionary would define it as a place where a person customarily receives their mail. He may get mail at both places. But
that's in Black? That's how the Black Law Dictionary?
Black says typically it's where a person, if I recall it, I can't recall it word for word, but it says typically it's where a person gets their mail.
So we're back to the post office box?
That could be an address, Your Honor, I think, even under this statute, because that would be an address. And whether you sleep there or not, it is an address. The statute says address, and we're stuck with it. And this indictment says address.
Any other questions? Thank you. We appreciate your
argument.
Your Honor. I think typically you two have raised more questions than we had when we came in here. We still appreciate your argument, and your case is submitted. you're free to go about your business, and we'll be in recess until the 3 o'clock docket.
If we have to change one of our other metaphors, we can't say we'll cross that bridge when we come.
back years ago, we used to say, in recollection of a particular wreck, we'll fall off that bridge when we get to it. Maybe we should return to